Ain't it just so nice? Ain't that track of the week just so nice? Welcome everybody to Permadeath Weekly. What you just heard was the theme of Azalea Town from Pokemon Silver, Gold, Crystal, my favorite gen of Pokemon. Big, super soft spot in my heart for Gold and Silver. I loved Red and Blue as a kid, but something about Gold and Silver, man, something about those just real pretty cartridges, just loved it. Big fan of Gen 2. Welcome to Permadeath Weekly, everybody. I am your host, Bill Conway. I'm a little bit late this week, whether you're listening to this on a Saturday night or potentially Sunday afternoon. I'm not entirely sure when this is going to go up, but I hope your weekend has been great. I hope if you saw any movies this weekend, whether you're catching up on the Endgame hype, you know, finally getting around to it, or if you did what I did and went out and saw Detective Pikachu, I hope that you had a great time. I'm going to go ahead and talk about Detective Pikachu, spoiler-free. I'm really not going to really talk about the plot at all. I just kind of want to give you my impressions. That is also why this episode is late. Two reasons, actually. I wanted to wait for Sony's State of Play on Thursday evening, which I usually record on Wednesdays, and I wanted to wait until after I had seen Detective Pikachu to record, because I wanted to give my impressions on the movie. And, man, you know, I went with my brother and my two cousins, who all four of us have been huge Pokemon fans forever. You know, growing up, playing Red and Blue, playing Gold and Silver, you know, passing the Game Shark around, giving ourselves unlimited rare candies, you know, the interplay between generation versions between the four of us has been, you know, one of those constants growing up. You know, even today still, you know, with Let's Go games and everything, everybody has kind of gotten back into it, and we're all super excited for Sword and Shield. So, like, Pokemon has had, you know, a really big impact on our lives, and it's had, you know, a continuous presence, you know, whether it's been there or whether it's just kind of, you know, been sitting waiting to emerge. You know, I think it's like this movie is kind of like that culmination, you know, because it brought back a lot of memories for us, you know, going to see Pokemon, the first movie, in theaters. And, you know, a really cool thing they did for Detective Pikachu was, I don't know how long they're doing it and how long the promotion's running for, if it's kind of a while supplies last type of thing, but with the purchase of your ticket, you get a pack of Pokemon cards. It's a pack of two. I'm pretty sure everyone is guaranteed a Detective Pikachu card and then a random Pokemon. I got Jigglypuff. My one cousin got Bulbasaur, and my reaction to that was like no, because like I like Jigglypuff and all, but you know, I think anybody with their second card is gonna want one of their old favorites. You know, my brother got Lickitung, and my cousin, the other cousin, got a Pokemon that I've never heard of, and I frankly don't remember the name. But it was, you know, a fun conversation starter, you know, talking about going to see Pokemon, the first movie in theaters, and getting the Mewtwo card and all that stuff. And, you know, it's just been a really neat, you know, bookend to us growing up on this franchise. And just an insane movie that exists. You know, the fact that a Hollywood made a Pokemon movie, and, you know, we're in the midst of this era where we're getting Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, and we're bringing these creatures that we've grown up and loved and onto the big screen into real life, that the thought of it makes you want to wince a little bit, like, oh god, what? Excuse me, what? Ryan Reynolds, what? Who? But they fucking pulled it off with Detective Pikachu. And like, it's not a perfect movie. You know, I think there are definitely things you could talk about its plot. You know, particularly in the second half. I think the first half of the movie is 100% better than the second half. The second half, it kind of starts trying to feel itself a little bit with its storyline. It gets really out there with some of its ideas, and they're cool. I mean, I know I'm not saying the second half of the movie is bad. It features probably one of my favorite set pieces, one of my favorite like popcorn flick set pieces ever. But at the same time, you know, the magic that is the first half of that movie, the magic that is exploring Rhyme City and just seeing the way Pokemon are integrated into this world, you know, it's just puts a big dumb fucking smile on your face, man. You know, seeing police dogs as Growlithe, seeing Squirtles help firefighters put out fires, you know, Charmander using their tails to cook food in food trucks. Like, there's just a really neat, just seamless, just super convincing implementation of Pokemon into the real world. you know, and there are Easter eggs for fans of the games, name drops and little call outs and things that put it and make it exist within, you know, the regions that we love and have grown up within the games. You know, it's just, man, I had a great time with it. You know, I truly, truly did. I think Ryan Reynolds did a really great job. You know, he plays kind of the same kind of character you usually expect Ryan Reynolds when he's being funny to play. But I think it worked. You know, I think Justice Smith did a really great job. I think, you know, in terms of his character, I mean, there's not much to play off of, really. He's kind of just the boy. But, you know, I thought him being kind of the straight man to this Pokemon world just worked, man. You know, really impressed with it. Really walked away from it just happy. I'm so happy they did it. Oh, also, you know, I always see, and this is a common concern, I think, with most movies, especially movies with jokes. You know, and this is very much a comedy movie, you know. A lot of comedy movies love to really just show their whole heart in the trailers, you know. And, like, a lot of people's concerns are like, oh, the funniest scenes are in the trailer. And, you know, one of the most prominent scenes in the marketing for this movie were the Mr. Mime scenes. And, man, you know, even seeing them in the trailer, seeing that scene in context of the movie, like, just, I was dying. It's just the whole theater was laughing their ass off at that. I think that entire sequence is just brilliant and just hilarious. And, you know, the facial expressions on Mr. Mime and what they're doing and what they're miming and everything about that scene is just funny and works. And they landed it. You know, that joke lands. You know, and there's so much in the movie that's not in the trailers and so much that, you know, is there for you to discover and little things to keep your eyes peeled for. And, man, just love it. And a lot more Pokemon than you'd expect, too. I mean, in terms of, like, the sheer variety of the ones that you just see in the city. And I'm sure you could watch that movie, like, 17 times. And just, and, you know, once you've seen it and seen the plot and everything, getting to just keep your eyes open on Rhyme City as they pan it and as they explore it, you know. Man. My expectations for this to potentially blow open a Pokemon movie franchise is just, I mean, that's what I'm hoping is this is the beginning of. I'm hoping this does well box office wise. I have no news to report on that. I'm sure there are stories on how it is done on Thursday night and all that stuff, but, you know, my hopes are to see a potentially more traditional Pokemon adventure on the big screen. Because while, like, this is our first time, and the Detective Pikachu story in general is very noir in nature, and as such unfolds that way, and does deal with it is a more crime focused story, and I would love to see a little more simple and light, adventurous version of Pokemon on the big screen next. I think, you know, I'm not saying remake Red and Blue. I'm not saying remake Ash's story. I'm just saying, man, how cool would it be to involve a story with the Elite Four or, you know, some kind of Pokemon League stuff or whatever? It'd be cool. I mean, it is interesting, though. You know, I thought this. There is a scene, and you can see it in the trailers. And again, I said I won't go into spoilers. This is more of light spoilery territory, I guess, but, you know, in the trailers, you see Pokemon fighting underground. Rhyme City is a city where Pokemon battling is not allowed. Pokemon and humans coexist. That's the point of the city, you know, is that they don't live in the wild, they live in the city with us. And as such, they don't want people battling them. So, like, naturally, you know, humans being scumbags that they are, underground Pokemon fight clubs exist. And it is very weird watching Pokemon battle in such a realistic fashion. You know, like, you don't think anything of it really playing the games. And, you know, it's an RPG. You play these games, you level these creatures up, you battle them, you cure them. But there's never any instances, really, of watching these underground fights and seeing these Pokemon get healed in any way. And just the griminess of the fight club and the griminess of the intentions of the gambling that's going on down there, you know, just the grittiness of it. It's a little more affecting seeing the Pokemon fight in that way. And you know, that's when I say that I'd love to see a lighthearted romp of, like, oh, maybe the Pokemon League and see Pokemon battle it out, you know, in competition. It also, at the same time, I can see maybe why they're apprehensive to maybe focus a lot on Pokemon battling, because, you know, it is the art team did an amazing job portraying these Pokemon in a realistic fashion. And I think all of them look great. I mean, some of them are disgusting looking, but I mean, it's natural, you know, that a giant tongue is going to look like that in real life. You know, on Lickitung. But I also think that, like, seeing them fight was kind of like, man, like, I feel bad. You can see the pain on their fucking face, and it's fucking horrifying, you know, in a way you don't expect. You know, everyone wants to see them duke it out, but then as they're duking it out, it's like, hey, how about no? Let's go get a kebab. Let's stop fighting. So that was something I was definitely, you know, surprised on how I felt about it. Sorry, my phone just went off, if you could hear that. Actually, give me 1 second. You know, it's funny when you do a podcast and, like, you make a call out to something the listener probably doesn't pay attention to, or you make a reference to you having to take a break, but there's really no break because you can edit it out. That's something I'm learning in podcast school to stop doing, but I continue to do it anyway. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm not a very good student. Stuff comes in one ear, out the other ear. Pokemon Detective Pikachu. I highly recommend it if you are a Pokemon fan, if you have kids who like Pokemon. Just hearing the kids yell out Pokemon names and stuff, you know, it's so cool to see kids not too cool for the shit that I liked as a kid. Because one of the things I've always thought growing up is like, man, you know, I loved Mario and Pokemon and Yoshi and all these things, but like as we grow up, you know, a lot of games marketed at kids, like Fortnite and stuff, just involves blasting people with a shotgun. And is it like, man, do kids like the kiddie stuff anymore? Or is it just us adults who grew up with it who are paying these companies' bills? But no, man, seeing the amount of kids at this shit who still like Pokemon, and, you know, just seeing the way that it's still effectively marketed towards them as well, is it's awesome to see it just ever present throughout the generations of life. And just seeing kids excited about characters and designs that I grew up with, it's just awesome to see that it's immortal, you know, and seeing it translate to the big screen will help that continue. So, Pokemon, man, I do love it. So, next up, something that has been ever present in our lives, and something that Square Enix hopes to keep that way with its upcoming remake. Sony did their State of Play on Thursday night, which is like kind of their Nintendo Directs. But they're very short, like 10 minutes long. I assume they exist probably to push out one big announcement and then like, hey, any little smaller stuff around it, you know, perfect time to get those in there too. The big thing with this was the Final Fantasy VII Remake trailer. And I don't have much to really say about Final Fantasy VII Remake because I have not played Final Fantasy VII. I have tons of friends who love Final Fantasy VII. I have friends who are excited about this remake. I have friends who know people who maybe are not so excited about this remake, depending on the changes that they are bringing to the combat system or whatever they're doing with the story, because, you know, it's also going to be confirmed, again, to be episodic, potentially, I assume, chopped up into 3 bits, which, you know, will be interesting to see how they do that with a JRPG, you know. Will it be 3, like, 30-hour games, you know, which I think is a cool, digestible way to play it, but I also... You know, how natural will the cuts be? You know, will it be an issue of, oh, wow, it's been a year and a half since episode one. When are we going to get the rest of this kind of deal? You know, because we already see long delays in episodic games that are 2 hours, that have episodes of 2 hours of length. I know Ebby is always very frustrated with the pace that they put out Life is Strange episodes. So, you know, I'm very curious, you know, how this will be handled, but that's not necessarily what I want to talk about when it comes to the Final Fantasy VII Remake trailer. I saw some drama pop up on Twitter. I hesitate to call it drama, especially compared to the actual drama that has been unfolding around the gaming community and the YouTube community over the last few days. But just the conversation, rather, on spoilers for Final Fantasy VII, because for the longest time, before we knew a remake was coming, I mean, Final Fantasy VII's plot, and especially its major deaths, and, you know, some of its reveals, and just the general nature of its relationship between Cloud and Sephiroth, has kind of maintained that, like, Star Wars original trilogy status of, like, well, yeah, you know what, the spoilers are just out there, and it's just part of pop culture. You know, Darth Vader being Luke's dad, you know, is like the big twist of that film, but it's like everybody knows that. You know, you're kind of born, though. A doctor says it to you when you pop out. You know, like it's just one of those things that is like on shirts, you know. And now, because of this conversation, I mean, I land on one side of the fence here on it. But I also don't want to say anything really, you know, especially the main spoiler people talk about with Final Fantasy VII. You know, the one that people will just shit out as a joke when talking about spoilers in general is like, you know, because it doesn't really ruin it, I guess, for most people, but It's a moment that, when it happened back in the day, it was a very impactful piece of video game pop culture. You know, and there's a reason why it holds that status next to, Luke's father. You know, it's just such a commonplace plot point to just talk about. So I've seen conversations pop up of people excited about this remake and people excited about playing it for the first time and seeing people talk about the game's plot, not necessarily in a malicious way of spoiling the game, but as this being probably the biggest remake of all time, you know, in terms of significance, and I'm not downplaying RE2's remake, you know, RE2, one of the best survival horror games of all time, getting a remake is no speck of dust. But in terms of just, you know, video game, you know, the iconic nature of Final Fantasy VII, it getting a remake is huge, man. You know, probably the most influential JRPG of all time in the West, for sure. Introduced a lot of people to this type of game, you know, and for its time was just a gorgeous masterpiece of a game. So, it getting a remake of this caliber, you're going to have fans talking about potential changes to the plot, you know, where it will be paced and just saying, how will this be handled? What will happen here? You know, just talking about things that have been common spoiler knowledge for a long time. And you're seeing people come out and say, hey, could you fucking stop it with the spoilers? Like, I'm looking forward to this remake. This will be my first time playing it. I would love to not know anything going in. And then people were replying, hey, the game's been out since 1997. It's been 22 years. I mean, if you really cared about Final Fantasy VII's story, you probably would have played it by now. You know, I guess if you're like a 16-year-old kid, I mean, you know, when will you have gotten a chance to play it? I mean, it's been re-released on PS4 and stuff since, but generally it's a product of your place in time. So those are the two sides that are going back and forth at each other. And me, you know me, I'm a big spoiler phobe. It's been a big part of my reformation. One of my goals for 2018 for Permadeath was to not let spoilers bother me so much, because they used to bother me to a degree that, you know, would truly ruin things for me, and I would let them ruin things for me. And, you know, at the end of the day, everything's good, it's good, man, you know? And I've let that kind of wash over me, and I've gotten spoiled plenty of times for plenty of things. I've gotten spoiled for Endgame. I got Red Dead 2 spoilers for me, but I pushed through and, you know, just had a great time anyway. So it's a thing of, I don't think they ruined anything, but, you know, I am a self, you know, proposed spoiler phobe. You know, I gladly will take on that title. I've let it really freak me out, and, you know, so I get where people are coming from. But at the same time, you know, I really don't know which side of the fence. I said before, I know which side of the fence I'm on, but at the same time, I don't know if I do. Sorry, I might have burped there. Again, podcast etiquette. I'm learning this. I got a grade the other day, letting me know I sent in an assignment, and it was like a fake little improv podcast we did with it. We got partnered up with somebody, and I had a grilled cheese for lunch, and I know I'm a little bit lactose intolerant, and I have a little burp in the thing, and I, you know, the mic didn't pick it up, but I didn't know that at the time, so I made a reference to it, and I got major points docked for that, because it takes attention away from the topic, much like I'm doing now. See, again, fuck, you know, I'm really not doing good in this class. I just want to tell you guys this, pure transparency, you know, because I'm trying to work through that class so I could do this show better. You know, it's all a process of me trying to make sure that I'm putting something out for you guys that is solid, and I'm doing very poorly in that class, and I don't know if it's translating to this. It's really, you know, eating away at me in a way that I was not expecting it to, really. But I'm really not sure where I fall on this, topic, because I get where people are coming from. This is a brand new game for a lot of people. Some people are like, you know, kids now, and like, you know, wow, this will be their first exposure to it. But I understand people going like, hey, wait a second, we've been waiting for this remake forever. This remake is kind of for us, in a way, you know, it's kind of payoff for our patience and our fandom, whatever. I want to openly discuss spoilers that have existed for 22 years with other fans of this series and this game, because they're going to be making changes to this and things are going to be shuffled around. And I'd love to discuss this with people in a way that doesn't shoot, you know, that doesn't muzzle me. So it's been really fascinating to see this. And I almost want to agree with the people who just want to discuss this game. Every major spoiler I've seen, just out of nature of existing since this game's been out, you know, like, it's not an instance of like, oh wow, you motherfucker. It's like, no, it's just, this is just some of the most commonplace plot points to discuss. Now, granted, there are lots of granular things, I'm sure, in Final Fantasy VII's plot that, like, aren't commonplace, that aren't just common knowledge. It's like there's plenty of things in Star Wars beyond Luke, you know, Luke's parentage. So, you know, I don't think it's open season to just constantly be blurting out the plot. I think there's some etiquette involved, especially in a time where, yeah, the remake is coming now. You know, back then there was no remake, so, you know, it was this kind of open season, whatever. So now that this remake does exist, you know, I'm super curious to see where this, where the internet lands on this, you know, because you often see every time there's a thread about spoilers, one of the first things people say is the Final Fantasy VII spoiler. I mean, they'll say the Titanic sinks and then say, well, that's not ruined for you, right? You know, this stuff happened however many years ago. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where the conversation on this lands, you know, because it's fascinating and it's unprecedented for the most part, really, you know. But I guess it also can be argued for, like, Game of Thrones and stuff, you know? Because it's like, if I really cared about the plot of this, I could just read the books, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's a thing of, like, you know, where does spoiler etiquette stop? Where does it start? You know, what's the time limit on a spoiler, you know? And for the longest time, these people have been able to just talk willy-nilly about character deaths in Final Fantasy VII, but now maybe there's a barrier being put up. I don't know. What do you guys think about this? Like, this is a conversational topic, really, and I'd love to know what you people think. Leave it in the comments below on YouTube. Tweet me at Pepperdham on Twitter. Tweet the podcast at Perma Podcast, on our Discord. Links are down below. Let me know what you think about this one, because this is one that I love to get a head count on where people land on this. Because, you know, I kind of know where I sit, but at the same time, I understand the perspective of both sides. You know, it's interesting, man. It's interesting. Another thing that came out of State of Play, the first thing they showed. I'm mostly bringing this up so that I could tell you guys that there's a way for you to try this game out, but they show the trailer, or the first gameplay trailer, for the upcoming expansion pack for Monster Hunter World, Iceborne, which is the new massive expansion pack they're putting out for the game, with a bunch of new monsters, a new area, new weapons, moves, all that kind of stuff. There is a demo out for Monster Hunter World on PlayStation 4. Well, you know, I don't have the length of that. This is the Final Fantasy 14 thing all over again. How fucking long is it? Until May 20th, you can try it out on PlayStation 4. And then your save file will carry over to the full game. So if you've had an interest in checking out Monster Hunter World, there's a pretty extensive demo out there on PlayStation 4. Progress carries over. Perfect time to get into the game and catch up before the expansion pack drops on consoles in September and on PC in winter. Capcom, what the fudging fuck are you doing? This is the second time you've doing this with PC launches. I thought all this time they'd be trying to catch PC players up with the event content, and they've been trying, but still the expansion pack is delayed for PC. I don't quite understand it. It's a really big bummer. I'm torn on where I want to play Iceborne at, because I would love to play it on PC with the uncapped frame rate and all that jazz and the load times that are of this planet. But at the same time, man, I'm going to want to play Iceborne in fucking September, because it could be 2-3 months before it comes out on PC. So, only negative really from that announcement. And it's still just puzzling. Very strange. Very weird. Speaking of stuff coming to PlayStation 4, EA Access is launching on PlayStation 4 in July. This has been the service that's been on Xbox and PC. PC, it's called Origin Access, where you can subscribe for whatever money a month. I don't know the amount, because I know Origin Access has Origin Access Premier, which is $15, but I don't know if EA Access has a similar service. But this is that EA subscription service where you get access to their games that are part of it, you know, whether it be the Madden games or whatever. And you get to play them, like, early, and you get to play fucking EA games. They're just in the library for you to download, kind of like Game Pass. So if you've been interested in that and you've been lamenting the fact that it's not on PlayStation 4, it's there now. I have no really dog in this race one way or the other, because if I'm going to subscribe, I'm going to subscribe to Origin Access on PC. But hey, if you're a PlayStation 4 gamer and you've been looking for this, there it is. The big thing that I want to talk about, because I'm very interested in where this will go. You know, we fought, you know, kind of fought the philosophical good fight of government and video games for a very long time. You know, we've had to deal with them wanting to ban video games outright because of violence and things like that. But now we have an instance where U.S. legislator, this article comes from GamesIndustry.biz, proposes a loot box ban. Senator Josh Hawley to introduce a bill prohibiting pay-to-win and loot box mechanics in games aimed at children. Now, obviously, this, you know, very, very heavily probably comes in the age of Fortnite. You know, we've had so many stories over the years of kids getting a hold of parents' credit cards and buying V-Bucks and FIFA money and all kinds of shit, you know, and parents not able to backcharge and just a whole mess of kids getting that sweet taste of cracking a pack, man. You know, that addictive rush of opening up loot boxes and children not understanding maybe the gravity of these things and, you know, not understanding the concept of money. You know, and that's the beginning of potentially very destructive habits. Because it is a rush getting a legendary or, you know, out of a fucking loot box. And that's been the struggle of, like, you know, these mobile games, these free-to-play games that kids get on their iPads and this, that nature of the microtransaction and how it has affected gameplay mechanics and the way that these developers get people to want to play longer and spend more money and all these things. It has become such an ongoing conversation in the games as a service bracket, you know, even in games not aimed at kids. You know, these mechanics have seeped their way into just about everything under the sun. So what this bill would do, it would be called the Protecting Children from Abusive Games Act, and it would prohibit offering randomized rewards to players through microtransactions, manipulating a game's progression systems to encourage players to spend money, or giving players who purchase microtransactions competitive advantages over others. The Federal Trade Commission will be responsible for enforcing the rules, treating the use of such mechanics as an unfair trade practice. Individual states would also be able to sue companies over violations to protect their residents. So, this would outright ban loot boxes. It would ban the idea of being able to crack a pack and potentially get a legendary cosmetic, you know, a legendary item, anything that increases, you know, advantage in gameplay. And it's such an interesting thing because we've seen this happen in other countries. You know, my big thing is, you know, it will completely change the way certain games are monetized. You know, I'm not here to talk about the kids. I'm here to mostly talk about the ripple effect it would have on gameplay mechanics for everybody, mostly. And just the way that certain games would have to be changed and the way they're monetized. You know, stuff like Overwatch. You know, because Fortnite doesn't have, you know, I said before, sorry, I actually apologize to Fortnite. Fortnite doesn't have loot boxes in its Battle Royale mode. Its microtransactions come from the Battle Pass and the fact that you could just outright buy skins. So, like, the monetization model of something like FIFA Ultimate Team, stuff like Overwatch, that's the stuff that would be affected by this, ultimately, because those are the games that have the loot boxes. Those are types of games that prey on, you know, timed events, you know, oh man, I didn't get the skin I wanted. Should I keep grinding it out or should I maybe drop $40? You know, those practices would go away in theory if this were to pass. But then it's the thing of, this is such a main monetization model for gacha games. Stuff that I play and obsess over very much. Dragalia Lost, I'm looking at you, my friend. You know, what would happen to games like that where that is their main monetization model? You know, it's an interesting thing because you bring up, it's like, how will a free-to-play game survive? You know, and you could say, well, they could aim at making a better game and then monetizing and attracting people to want to pay. Again, Fortnite, again, people pay willingly for that game a lot of money because they're getting things they know they're getting with their dollar. They're willing to spend because, hey, that $25 might be a lot of money, but I'm going to look like a fucking reindeer after I spend it, and I know I'm going to look like a reindeer. You know, and a lot of people get that one-time purchase out of the way. Whereas Overwatch, it's like, you know, I spend $40 and I just get a bunch of fucking stickers for the wall, you know? So, I'm conflicted in a way because it's like, I get it, you know, make a better game, make a better monetization model. But some games who do this are not really that bad, you know, in terms of a cosmetic, in terms of the way Overwatch monetizes it, I don't mind. But I, you know, we'll see what it will do to certain games. I'm not sure, you know, how will it affect something like Overwatch? Will Overwatch apply a Battle Pass model? You know, will you be able to just buy event cosmetics outright or earn them through the Battle Pass? I have long since wanted loot boxes to go away from Overwatch entirely. So, like, this is something that I would probably be in favor of just because I would love to see developers try a different way to monetize their games, you know? Try a way to have people spend money on something that isn't that, fuck it, man. It doesn't promote gambling. Doesn't activate those impulses on people who are susceptible to these things. I would feel bad to see games that aren't predatory but use this model, you know, fail and go down and lose money because of something like this. But at the same time, in the long run, I think it can only be a net gain, really, in terms of it not preying on people's addictive habits. And this doesn't even have to just do with children. This is for anybody, man. Some people are very susceptible to things like these, you know? And, like, I feel it creep up on me, man. Cracking fucking crown crates and ESO is the worst experience ever. The drop rates are so shit, but the animation's so nice, and it's like, maybe next time I'll get a mount. So it's like, fuck, man. I'd love to see that shit go away. Just let me buy the fucking mount. You know? It's such a funny thing where it's like, man, I could spend $20, get some crates, maybe get the mount. You're $80 deep in the hole when it's like, I would have happily just given you $40 for this stupid fucking digital horse. I truly would have. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where things go here. You know? It's an instance where a lot of people want to push back against government in certain things and getting their hands involved in certain things, but I can really, this is one of those instances, man, where I don't think it's a bad fight to put up, you know, at least maybe it's even to put heat on people, you know, certain developers and publishers. I'm interested to see where that goes. Another thing I'm interested to see, I'm very happy to see a positive change in a storefront. And while it's not one that we necessarily, you know, care about, the Google Play Store is changing the way that they calculate their review scores, or the review score that we see on the tin of a game. And by that I mean, oh, I searched up Dragalia Lost as a 4.2 stars. That's its overall rating since its launch. You know, ever since it came out, that is its overall, you know, aggregate of its review scores. You know, since it launched back in September. And it's interesting because, like, a lot of games go through such ebbs and flows in the way that they are developed, you know, and updates and people's reactions to them, whether people like them, whether people hate them. You know, it's a thing we've seen on Steam. You know, you have the overall user review average and then the recent reviews. And I love that system because you get a good idea of, oh, wow, this game, overall, people really like it, but recently developers have been putting some pretty sketch fucking patches in the game, and right now, it's mixed. It has mixed reviews recently. You know, it gives you an idea of where the game's at now. But it also gives you an idea of, you know, overall, you know, this game's well-received, but what might be going on? You know, or you can see it's, you know, negative in the past, but the recent reviews are very positive, and it's like, wow, okay, they're really turning this ship around. So what they're doing with Google Play is the star rating is going to have a much heavier weight towards recent reviews, which I think is great, you know, especially for, you know, these games that have persistent updates in worlds and these gacha systems. And because, man, some of the changes in Dragalia Lost are super positive. Dragalia Lost has a 4.2 on Google Play, and I think that is one of the most generous and just well put together gacha games I've ever played, to the point where I've willingly spent money on it because Nintendo and Side Games are doing such a great job. And I think, man, I would love to know, you know, in its recency, what would its review score be if the most recent reviews were weighted better? Because I think, man, it's doing really well lately in terms of its updates, you know, lowering the cost of pools, doing a lot of nice quality of life things, and just overall making it a much better experience than it was at launch. You know, and I'm curious if a lot of those negative reviews that might have brought it down from a higher tier in the fours were maybe complaints people had back then that they fixed since. So it's interesting. I'd love to see that for everything, man. PlayStation Store, I'd love to see them introduce this waiting system. It would be nice to see what the perception of the game is lately, after updates. You know, I think Steam does it the best. So you know, this is a nice change for Google Play, too. Because mobile games, I know, but I look up a lot of games in the Google Play Store. I play a lot of mobile RPGs and gacha games, and I jump around through a lot of stuff. So it's handy to see where the community's mind is at with some of these things. You know, and I think it's a neat change. And I mostly brought it up in this show because I'd love to see it applied across every storefront that we use. You know, because while user reviews have a tendency to potentially suck with review bombing and stuff, it is still, at a cursory glance, a really great way to get an idea of what you're spending your money on, you know, alongside using Twitch and YouTube and stuff like that. So yeah, cool little change there for Google Play. So that about does it for industry news. You know, something happened this week with a very popular YouTuber, Pro Jared. And, you know, I don't want to really talk about this. Because I think if you want to, you can easily find out what this is about. You know, a very popular YouTuber earlier this week was over a million subscribers on YouTube. He's seen oftentimes associated with Dungeons & Dragons and Wizards of the Coast and a lot of their streams. He's involved in a very popular Dungeons & Dragons show. He has shown up on Nickelodeon shows. He has shown up with Nintendo, with Reggie. You know, he's a big YouTuber, man. Pro Jared, he's part of Normal Boots. His face is there. He's been out there. He cheated on his wife. He's been involved in plenty of underage solicitation of nudes and sending nudes and all kinds of creepy fucking things, man. And I don't want to go into detail about those things because it's not something I don't want to talk about that stuff because it's fucking sickening. And it bums me out because I know what it's like to like grow attached to a YouTuber and like really like place your identity with like, man, I love this group. I love these content creators. I'm a big fan of them. I'm so happy to show them to people. I'm so happy to you know, be able to, oh man, show a friend a review or you know, send a link to somebody. And it would just absolutely gut me if these people I like turn out to be complete fucking weirdos. You know, in Pro Jared's case, for sure, dude's a fucking weirdo. And I have a sibling who, you know, who watches people, and I just, like, these fucking... the reason I don't want to talk about it is because it will make me too mad to openly say the things that he has done with his influence and with the power that, you know... Because here's something that I think a lot of people don't understand. Is a lot of people will say, especially in the nudes category of Pro Jared's, you know, accusations here and the things that have been shared and the evidence that has been shared, is it's a thing of like, a lot of people, and this happened with the Nick Robinson stuff too, from Polygon, of like, you know, people willingly send somebody a nude. But I don't know if people understand really just when you're somebody like Pro Jared, you know, who has power, man. Like, he carries influence. It isn't as simple as just, like, oh, I sent Pro Jared my nudes. It isn't as simple as that. It's never as simple as that. You know, because a lot of people want to go, well, you know, they shouldn't have sent it to him then. And it's like, you know what? Like, it's really not your place to say that. There's a responsibility that needs to fall on the shoulders of these people. There's a responsibility that they have to not be a scumbag. Because in, especially this instance, when you run sex blogs on Tumblr and try to attract your viewers to take part in that stuff, and you're sending these creepy messages and you know these people love you for your videos, you know these people admire you, and like, you know that you could just like at the snap of your finger, just have them wrapped around it. It's your responsibility not to fucking prey on people like that. It's your responsibility not to take advantage of the influence that you have over them. It is not as simple as, well, they sent them, it's their fault. It's such a psychological power play, man, that these people have over the kids who watch them. And, like, I know maybe it's hard to understand for, like, old fogies who don't understand social media and YouTube and influence and just the power people have. I know it sucks, and I know it shouldn't be this way, but, I mean, look at the fucking jokers who got tricked into going to Firefest. It's so easy to swing yourself around on these platforms and convince people to do things because they admire you. And it's nobody's fault for admiring these people. It's nobody's fault for going, wow, I love this guy's videos. He seems very awesome. Oh my God, he messaged me. Holy shit. This is amazing. You know, and it's their responsibility to not take advantage of that relationship. And time again, you see these fucking people do that. And it's sickening to me. It's like, it drives, it's like, dude, It's so easy not to be a fucker. Like, it's so easy not to be one. You know? Like, especially to this degree. You know, you could be an irritable asshole, whatever. You know, some people just have bad days. Some people are just mean. But to take advantage of the trust of somebody who follows your work and makes you who you are, for you to abuse that power you have, man, you deserve every fucking comment thrown your way. And I understand that, you know, cancel culture and whatever is a thing that can be very volatile, you know, towards certain situations. But in situations like this, man, I just get the fuck off the internet. He tweeted the other day. I said I wasn't going to talk about this, but again, this is why I didn't want to, because it's a thing of like, it really aggravates me because I love this stuff. I love YouTube. I love Twitch. I love the communities that evolve around these things. And it's such a shame because that people like this exist within them, because so many people flock to these communities, people who are vulnerable, people who are so happy to find like-minded individuals, are so happy to find, you know, such niche communities, you know, whether it be people who are furries or people like D&D or people who like certain types of RP. These people flock to these things and find friends and find a way to get out of maybe the real world and how shitty it is, or, you know, whether it be the political climate or whatever it is. And they involve themselves with these leaders, these people who foster these communities, the people who make these videos, the people who are supposed to be the ones who are there to give people that space. And once they get into that space, these people come in and fucking prey on them. They take advantage of it. It gets to a point where you're making these videos now and you're loving this. You're loving this power trip just so you could take advantage of the fact that you fucking could do a 1-minute review of Mario Odyssey. Like just the ego trip that just, oh my God. It's such a shame, you know, because, you know, I've seen directly the influence of a good community. And a good community leader, and what it can do for people who are suicidal, what can it do for people who are lost. And, you know, it happens more often than it should that those people get displaced then because of poor leadership and just total lack of responsibility from people like Pro Jared. And it's something that I don't think will ever stop, and it's something that maybe it's probably happening to your favorite content creator. You know, it's a thing where you'll never know until it comes out, until people are brave enough to come out. And would this ever have, you know, I mean, the stuff where he cheated on his wife, yeah, they got divorced, that was probably going to come out. But if they hadn't gotten divorced and, you know, and she stayed in that fucking disaster of a relationship, would these other instances of Pro Jared's behavior have come out? I don't know. And it's scary to think that how much stuff is out there. You know, we have so many things coming out about YouTubers and Twitch streamers that it's just so sad, man. It really hurts to read this stuff. You know, but yeah, so be better to people. You know, if you're in a community and you see shit and maybe you're fishy, again, like I said, cancel culture, whatever, you know, it's a thing of like, you don't want to jump the gun on things, but at the same time, it's like, how many people are getting away with shit that are just going to keep doing it, you know? And in Pro Jared's case, who the fuck knows what else he's got in his computer too, you know, from people that he's gotten nudes from. Like, it's just disgusting. This guy's a fucking creep. And I've never really watched his stuff. You know, I've always seen his face around recommendations and things like that, you know, in my recommended feed, because he's, you know, affiliated with a lot of people I watch, you know, but good riddance, dude. Fucking asshole. Anyway, this has been Permadeath Weekly for the week of May 11th or 12th, wherever this goes up. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you saw Detective Pikachu. I hope you saw Avengers Endgame. I hope you played some good video games. If you like the show, leave a comment down below. Tweet me at PermaPepperedHam about PermaPeppered. Tweet me at PepperedHam. Tweet the podcast at PermaPodcast. Find our Discord in the links below. Send us an email at permadeathpodcast@gmail.com. Any concerns you have about the show, let us know. Maybe the show isn't on the podcast feed that you regularly listen to. I'll try to fix that. You can find the show, as always, on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Google Play, wherever the fuck you go. But let me know if it's not where you usually would like to listen to it. And yeah. Man. After this is over, cool off. And I'll see you in the history.